favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
The Jack in the Box chicken sandwich thing you posted today.
Yeah.
The chicken sandwich looks so good. I was like, I want to go try that.
Uh-huh.
They gave me the wrong sandwich.
No!
They gave me the standard chicken sandwich.
Oh, bitches.
I know. But I had never had the regular chicken sandwich before, and it was surprisingly delicious.
It's surprisingly good, isn't it?
It's surprisingly good. Like,
yeah.
More so than I was anticipating.
Yeah.
So it wasn't all bad,
mm-hmm.
But I was pissed because I wanted that one.
Yeah, I wanted the fat
really
boy
good.
One.
Yeah. I wanted the I'm stoned and it's 3 a.m. one.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, I think it's definitely up there with KFC and Popeyes for me. Like,
KFC?
Huh? The KFC one's fantastic.
I've never had it. I don't really eat at KFC.
No, it's really good.
All right.
I'm, like, astonished.
You're astonished.
Yeah, yeah.
I will take your word for it.
Oh, man. Well, shall we just
dive right in?
Just because it is that week.
It is.
That week.
This is Halloween.
Yeah.
This is Halloween.
That's the week
Halloween,
I was referring
Halloween,
to. Yes.
In this town, we come home.
But we don't want to pay for the song, Alex.
There's a pumpkin throw.
You got to remix it a little bit.
<That's> Which one's
yours? Danny Elfman didn't do this scratch, so you're all right. We're good on that one. We made it. Hey, we did it.
Yay.
We made it.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, Anthony Fuentes.
Yes, who was just very enthusiastically ranking chicken sandwiches, as I do, I guess, every time I talk to people.
No, I mean, now you're just my chicken sandwich friend that I speak to about chicken sandwiches.
It's good. I'm glad I became known in the community about this. Yeah.
One of the best things that's happened to me this month is several people have reached out to me and have said that I have inspired them to go through horror, to watch new horror films this month.
Oh, nice!
And it makes me so happy.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, now's the time to do it.
Right, I mean, this is it.
Yeah. Right? As we said up top, this is Halloween.
This is Halloween.
Halloween. God damn it. No more.
Well, I can do it.
I know you can,
episode.
I know, but our listeners have to learn information, Alex.
You're like, I worked on this episode.
Very last minute, no.
I saw when you... last edit was made 9 hours ago, buddy. That was this morning.
Hey, that was discussion questions. You know I last minute those ones all the time.
No, I can't say shit. I last minute everything. Procrastination is a driving force for most of my work ethic.
Oh, but we do so good.
All right, let's go ahead and dive right in. This week, this Halloween, we are talking about Goosebumps.
Yes, yes. We're not talking about the movie. We are talking about the movie a little bit. We're not talking about a TV show, although the TV show is included. We're talking about the phenomenon in the 90s.
The general kind of, ooh.
Yes, we're going to bring it nostalgic again. We're going to go the 1993 fucking Ice Cube, like everything. We're going all in on this. Pure 90s, pure nostalgia, pure horror. Goosebumps,
oh,
very
so
foundational
good.
For
yes.
for a whole generation of people.
Foundational horror for so many.
Mm-hmm. And of course, IMDb doesn't have shit to say about the books or the original series. So
right.
I include a quote from R.L. Stein. And I think I'm at top. So we're covering Goosebumps. And it's described from author R.L. Stein as scary books that are also funny.
Thanks.
So, you know... He wrote the whole thing, and he still has a similar IMDb-ish synopsis.
Concise.
Very
to the
concise.
Point.
Yeah. Of course, created by R.L. Stein. Notable series in the Goosebumps, book installments are the original series, which ran from good old 1992 to 1997.
Nice.
Give Yourself Goosebumps. I don't know. That was one of the other side series. Oh, wait, that was the Choose Your Own Adventure
one. I was
going
to say, that's the Choose Your Own Adventure one. Put
those
some
ones,
respect
those
on...
Those ones were great. Those ones were fantastic.
Yeah.
I love those ones. Oh, we're going to talk about that shit. Goosebumps 2000, also known as the beginning of the end.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Goosebumps 2000 was their attempt at, like, a reboot.
Kinda. We're going to totally talk about it. We're definitely going to talk about that. And of course, Goosebumps Horrorland, which is, of course, I think the only other really successful one after that.
Okay.
One.
So, good to know.
But again, I say I think I did the whole research. It's coming up right now. The initial release date for what I'm going to say is one of the biggest book series of all time was July of 1992. Miss Webster wasn't even born yet.
No.
And I was a young
wee
kid.
Lad.
Yeah, wee lad. That's a good way of putting it. Yes. Now, this number is actually wrong. Copies sold is actually, I put 350 million. Latest figures, over 400 million.
Oh.
400 million books sold worldwide.
Damn.
Yeah. And that's not including all the merchandise with the video games.
The video games
with all the kids.
The merch.
Yeah, yeah. All the merch, all the Frisbees and shit. It was in the 90s.
I was thinking t-shirts, but you wouldn't be dealing with Frisbees, but sure.
Oh, I'm from the era, Alex. There were goddamn Frisbees.
There were fucking Frisbees.
There were Frisbees and Pogs and fucking everything. It was great.
Listen to episode 100 to hear both James and Anthony just tearfully explain Poggers to me.
Oh, that's right, because you don't understand.
I don't know, like, you play for Pogs, then you play for Slammers, and...
Yeah, there's a whole lore behind
it. There's a lore, and yeah. There's games, and the Slammers were bigger than Pogs.
Yeah, and your Pogs had characters and, like, merchandise
sure.
on it, and
there
that was a reflection of you. That was a reflection of you. So mine had the Haunted Mask, and I was a goddamn G for it.
Really?
Yeah,
oh,
I did.
Wow.
I had the Haunted Mask.
You would.
I did.
You would.
I was a spooky boy. But, you know, before we get started, listeners, I just want to say thank everyone for sticking with us. Wishish.
Your mouth is still numb.
It's still, I went through dental surgery less than a week ago. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But for our spooky season, you know?
Yeah.
It is our season. It's often fun. We've covered some great stuff this month. It really is, like, it's our highlight. But, just so you know, we got plenty of good stuff on the way. We're going to discuss right after this.
Yes.
Yes.
At the end, I'm sure we're going to go way into it.
Yes. But
oh,
what
man.
Do we have to go way into right now, Alex?
We have to go way, way back into the history of R.L. Stine.
Oh, that's right. Not the 90s yet. Much later. Good old wartime America earlier.
Oh,
a little
great.
Earlier, yeah.
So, getting his start rather early, a 9-year-old R.L. Stine... known as Bob by his bros.
That's true. A lot of bros.
He happened upon a typewriter in the attic of his Ohio home.
Oh, shit. Nothing ever good comes from the attic of an Ohio home, right?
No. Nothing good comes out of Ohio.
We have Ohio people that listen to us.
I'm sure you guys are wonderful people and you want nothing more than to get out of Ohio.
That's actually a very good point.
So, he used his 9-year-old arm strength to carry the old typewriter to his room, where he spent a major part of his adolescence writing stories and junk books.
Okay, those old-school typewriters, though?
Are fucking heavy.
Yeah, I don't know how he fucking did it. He had a pulley system or something to get that shit down there.
No, he did the nine-year-old, I'm too weak to do this, but no one can tell me shit thing, where he picked it up. Took two steps, put it down, picked it up, took two steps, put it down.
Yeah, didn't bother pushing. Like,
no.
That wasn't part of the equation at all.
I mean, if there were stairs involved, then, like, there's
no... Oh, there had to be. Oh, he crushed his grandma in the process, but she broke the fall and he's fine. Yeah, that's how we get the stories.
Yeah, no. Some say that grandma still haunts that Ohio attic.
She gives him the book ideas.
He was known by many as a very fearful child, once being terrified by his mama's reading of the original Pinocchio, as the story was far more gruesome than the Disney adaptation.
I love it, because I didn't quote it, but there's an interview where he talks about this, and he's talking about his career and stuff, and very, like, almost formal, and then he breaks
sure.
into this, he's just like... And by the way, oh my god, Pinocchio was, like, way scary. Like, he, like, really kind of loses it for a second.
He's just like, no, it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, you kidding me? That Disney shit? Nah.
Fuck that. So writing came natural to the young writer, and his skills eventually landed him at the University of Ohio in the mid-60s, where he would write for the campus's humor magazine, The Sundial.
Oh, hippie R.L. Stine. It's gotta be. It's gotta be fantastic.
Yeah. Stine.
Sorry, he's like on psychedelic drugs. Like, what if you put on like a mask and you like can't take it off?
Yeah, that would.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's just how he gets his ideas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's
drugs.
Secretly really into mushrooms this entire time.
Secretly? Little do you know. Known drug advocate, R.L. Stine. Stein would take a chance on himself and move to New York City.
Oh, shit.
Where he would eventually land a job at a little-known company known by the name of Scholastic?
Yeah.
You might have heard of them.
Maybe.
Creating the children's magazine Bananas in the mid-70s.
So we were just burning through decades here.
I mean, that's fair.
I mean, I'm sure, again, there was a lot of sex and drugs in between there and probably a wife, you know?
Maybe, sure. Going by the name Jovial Bob Stein.
Hey.
He would write humor books for children when not working at Scholastic. This worked out for a while until Scholastic went through a major reorganization after a good old American recession.
Oh, President Carter.
resulting in the firing of Jovial Bob, whose name was no longer applicable.
No, not at this point.
He was not jovial in this moment.
Mm-mm.
Perhaps finding the situation no longer humorous. Fuck you. He decided to branch out and focus his energies on a new genre, horror.
Oh, shit.
Take your anguish and focus it.
That's right. Channel that bitch.
His first foray into the spooky stuff would be called Blind Date and be aimed squarely at the young adult crowd. Blind Date. That's scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
It's a lot scarier nowadays, for sure.
I mean, so... Turns out this was the best thing that could have happened to him, as Blind Date became a bestseller, leading to a string of other young adult horror novels like The Babysitter and The Girlfriend. These successes led to him to work with an emerging channel by the name of Nickelodeon?
I don't know. Nickelodeon.
Who are these people?
Whatever, dude.
They needed a writer for their program Eureka's Castle, which was a puppet show that would eventually find its home on Nick Jr.
You know, it's really interesting because, yeah, there's a documentary on Hulu called The Orange Years, which goes through a lot of this particular era.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think, was it you?
Phil recommended it, because I watched it because he told me about it, and it's fascinating because you can tell in these early parts, Nickelodeon really didn't know what the fuck they were doing. They just knew that they wanted to make a channel just for kids, and they were kind of going the PBS route until, you know, I guess like this one, they didn't, and end up working out really well for them.
The author soon found himself with his biggest success yet. Fear Street, which would go on to sell over 80 million copies. Don't worry, I'm sure with its recent success on Netflix, we'll get to that eventually.
Yeah, at some point.
But with such a huge string of successes throughout the 70s and 80s, on came the 90s, which were a whole new beast culturally. But how is Jovial Bob going to keep the momentum going in the 90s?
He's going to move with his auntie and uncle to Bel Air, actually. That's what's going to happen, yeah.
Let me tell you a story now. His world got flipped, turned upside down.
Recession in the 70s! Oh, man. So Arnold Stein and his wife, Jill Stein, saw the success of Fear Street and decided to repeat the model with the brand new series they titled... Well, the title of this podcast, Goosebumps. For this new series, Stein would write for a younger crowd than the Fear Street audience and utilize his childhood fears as the basis for his stories, alongside taking inspiration from movies and even little instances in his own life. Yeah. So, for example, Slappy the Dummy in the upcoming Night of the Living Dummy series, which ended up being a big hit, was based on a character from The Adventures of Pinocchio, because again, Pinocchio scared the shit out of R.L. Stein. It's funny how this inspiration comes from like so deep and it becomes so successful.
Right.
Yeah.
I also, just quick, I just want to just kudos to R.L. Stein for giving children the fear of ventriloquist dummies, like, for years to come.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Twilight Zone did that also.
Sure, so, yeah. But Twilight Zone was for, I would say, a different age group.
You're right. He just brought it back. He was
just like, we're gonna recycle this shit.
It's like, it's been a while since, like, these kids shit their pants over a dummy. Now's the time.
Totally.
Yeah. And, of course, the story of the haunted mask was inspired by Stein's son, who had a difficult time taking off a mask he was wearing during Halloween.
Oh, no.
So not the mushroom trip, but he could have been high during it. Who knows?
I mean,
yeah, it's very possible. Stein wanted to write spooky stories that would also be funny to children, and oftentimes show them triumph over the forces of evil, though not without a very strange twist ending most of the time.
Yeah.
Oh, which are always fun. They're very, very fun.
Those twist endings always. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, Okay.
It's like, oh, the cheese was alive. Okay. Boy, don't eat
it. It was sentient cheese.
Sentient cheese. Oh, they didn't. It didn't mold.
That's why.
Yeah. We just wrote a Goosebumps novel right there. Anyways. With a steady base of stories ready to go, Goosebumps launched in July of 1992, sometime after Dr. Dre's The Chronic, with...
Thank you for the cultural relevant comments.
I have to throw that in there. With Welcome to Dead House, and I'm going to go ahead and say right now, as a person who witnessed this happen, this shit was fucking huge.
Yeah?
It was huge. Soon after the release of the first few children's novels, which were widely available in bookstores and Scholastic book fairs.
Ugh, Scholastic book fairs.
I know. I miss them so. They were amazing.
I just remember my parents being like, listen, you can pick a book. Otherwise, you will bankrupt this family.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. There were some times they did the book fair and I couldn't buy it.
Yeah, same.
I couldn't buy
same.
It. I'm like, you know what? And you know the bitch-ass part, too, is they would give us the week before the flyer. So we can pick ahead of time.
I can look at what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
And look at what I couldn't have.
Oh, and I would just window
beg.
Shop.
I'd window shop. I'd beg. Ugh.
And they would show Goosebumps books that hadn't been released yet. So I'd be like, whoa, Monster Blood 3.
Oh, God.
Ah. Okay, sorry. That one hurt to bring back. The Goosebumps series was regularly topping the New York Times bestseller list for children's literature, selling at this point in time an average of 1 million copies a month almost instantly.
Jesus Christ.
1 million fucking copies.
Woo.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And this also came around, again, the same time as, like, Doom, which we covered as well, which was, like, pushing a million as well. People were in the mood to buy some shit at this time.
I think, again, you're talking about this, like, cultural shift.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, I don't know, was into this weird, like, spooky, weird,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. They wanted something new.
I feel like the 80s was very peppy and, like, whatever. But, like, media outside of, like, horror movies in the 80s wasn't quite as scary. The games weren't scary, you know, shit
well,
like that.
Well, even, like, if you want to look at, like, your traditional 80s slashers, they still primarily focus around your standard preppy kind of type mm-hmm. characters. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, we're all the demons. More demons.
More demons.
More demons and fucked up shit happened to kids. That's right.
Oh, man.
This can't month. Yeah, I know. This is not a good month for me. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying. No, even for me, like, this past month, like, a lot of the horror films I've been watching, like, mm-hmm. in my challenge, a lot of sad things happening to children.
Right? But if you gotta think about it, too, three of the four things we covered this month focus on children. Sinister,
this is just more like I don't think there's like blatant child
over the
death.
Garden wall.
Okay, sure. It's an unfortunate month for children.
Yeah, that's true.
Mild inconvenience.
That's true. That's
life
true.
Lessons.
Is that life lessons? Yeah, yeah. Right,
life
right.
lessons for children, unless it's Sinister, in which case they are a juice pouch for a demon.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Like, oh, look at this. He's really into this, their version of Capri Sun.
Exactly. Just has a big old straw. He's like, I want barbecue 79.
I can't wait till somebody moves again. Yeah. I know. Reception for the books. Listen to our Sinister episode on that one. Again, thanks for Sasha. Again,
yeah,
for
thank guesting. You, Sasha. That was so fun.
A lot of fun. Reception for the Goosebumps books was actually mostly positive, with review sites often referring to it as funny, icky, and just a bit menacing. And, of course, deliciously chilling. Though, as with everything, there were some haters. There were some haters.
Aren't there always?
Oh, always. Yeah, people just hating. Particularly Mark Silver from the U.S. News and World Report, who referred to the series as sub-literature and tame. While Roderick McGillish, good old fucking pinky out piece of shit from the Bookbird, referred to the series as so artificial, so formulaic, so predictable, and so repetitive. Oh my God. As he dropped his monocle into his tea glass.
Like he's calling it so repetitive while he's being so repetitive.
That's what I thought also. That's exactly what I thought. I thought the same thing. I'm like, okay, well, you know, you've changed your sentences up, buddy. Huh? How about that? But again, I'm sure this kept the Stein family up at night as they attempted to slumber on their piles of money.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure. I would love it for, like, adult critics to call a children's book tame.
Yeah.
It's a children's book.
What are they going to do?
It is a children's book.
Again, that poor Stein family having to read these words in the 90s as they're... You know how hard it is to put wet, tear-filled money in your wallet? He had to do, thankfully, he had other bills to put in there and replace it with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That's exactly how it works.
Of course, the demand was so high that Stein was finishing books at an average of 3.5 weeks, sometimes getting multiple books finished within 1 month.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, he was on a fucking tear. At one point, R.L. Stein's success... for the series accounted for around 15% of Scholastic's annual revenue, which in academic terms means he and his former employees by the balls. Academically speaking. Just like a vice.
Just a fucking vice grip.
The best part for the author was, in his own words and from what a lot of critics told him, he was being credited with getting children excited to read again. And, of course, the literary community, they just couldn't be happier. Less happy, however, they were the Christians. They weren't as happy.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, no, they a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, Alex.
Ugh,
yeah.
Don't they always?
Eh, sometimes. Like all the time, yeah. 60%, nah, like 90. Yeah.
Yes.
But, hey, got kids to read, got me to read.
I mean, it got me to read.
Yeah, see?
Of course.
And leave Christianity. Probably not his...
It's a more nuanced story. I don't think Goosebumps is single-handedly responsible for me leaving.
It's on the path. This is the first step.
First step is admitting you have a problem. Second step is reading Goosebumps.
Yes, that's right.
So conservative Christians and other parent groups made Goosebumps the 15th most challenged book of the 90s, even going as far as to have a hearing broadcast on C-SPAN.
Oh, shit. 1990 C-SPAN. Newt Gingrich was just jerking off to the thing the whole fucking time off camera. You know it.
Oh, absolutely. Which resulted in the books being cleared as the actual parents of young readers seemingly thought banning the books was, well, dumb.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? The groups make a big old outrage and a stink, and they get to hear from the parents, like, oh, it's fine.
It's fine.
He's, like, actually really calm now.
Still, regardless, the main criticisms from activist groups were that the books were too scary for young audiences and featured occult or satanic themes.
I fucking wish.
I fucking wish they were satanic themes. Are you kidding?
God.
Also, this is R.L. Stein. This is a Jewish man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you mean? Like, I am so sure that there is some anti-Semitic, like, rigmarole involved in this. Where
oh, absolutely.
Just like, it's Satanism.
Mm-hmm.
It's vaguely.
You did that voice so well. I know that PTA voice right there. That was fucking it. Oh, I feel like that gave me some latent PTSD from, like, being a kid and, like, no, it's not. No, it's not. That's Satanism. I mean, but they always do that, though, right?
No, it's true. Well, it's just, like, it's a Jewish man writing about something spooky. Therefore, they're just, like, it's satanic.
That's the devil, sir.
Sure.
All these people.
Anyway, so one company that didn't give a shit about conservative Christian criticisms was...
The Fox.
The Fox.
I was going to say the Fox Network, but I clearly forgot one word. El Fox.
El Foxo.
What was it, Alice? What network?
The Fox Network.
Yay.
Surprisingly. Who agreed to broadcast a Goosebumps TV show in 1995 at the height of the series' popularity.
Now, for a little context for our listeners... Fox, at this point in time, was the counterculture TV network TV channel.
What happened?
Rupert Murdoch, she just took it in a different direction because that's where the money was. It was always about where the money was. So Fox debuted with Married with Children, had The Simpsons, which also was satanic and also blah, 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 and all those things. but they had
that
other
shows. That was an Alex Jones.
Oh my God, that was the fucking Bart Simpson. But like that was... Fox was targeted a lot throughout the 90s.
Okay.
And so, naturally, of course they were going to fucking take Goosebumps. They're like, yeah, okay, this is pissing off people. It gets us fucking attention. It's all about attention. But
so he's like a troll.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Like
except,
a television, or like a network troll.
Except when counterculture, I think, became the norm.
Sure.
That's when it kind of flipped to like, okay, now we back the Christians because now they're the ones that
right. Well,
get
that's
the
what
attention.
I mean.
Yeah, it's all about
in the
what's
way
hot.
That like... A lot of conservatives, like, just say, like, antagonistic shit because mm-hmm. it gets people to pay attention to, like, whatever conservative Christian value they're trying to make, like, their point for.
But Alex, they're losing the war on Christmas. They're losing it.
They're losing it.
Have you heard somebody say happy holidays recently?
Yes.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Because Jesus was white and he was born.
That's right. He was there with Santa Claus and machine guns. Talk about the Second Amendment. I fucking
hate Again, these we're talking about blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus Christ, who was born on December 25th.
Which you must acknowledge on your Starbucks cups, all right? Not with this happy holidays bullshit. Exactly. You put a goddamn Christmas tree on there.
What are they picturing? I want to know what a conservative Christian, like Starbucks cup is. Is it just a picture of a white, blonde hair, blue eyed, like Jesus holding a fucking AK?
supply side Jesus. Yes. Supply side Jesus. That's right. Minimum wage. Yeah. Right,
It just says in big bold letters, Merry fucking Christmas.
The workers would have, they don't get lunches anymore.
Right. Sorry, this is our soapbox hour.
Oh, no, it's good. It's just as a secret. They'll never be happy. Don't worry.
They'll never be happy. I could talk about this forever. The Christians put Christmas on freaking in the end of December to compete, to basically replicate the pagan holiday.
Oh, I know. And they put this shit on R.L. Stein. This pagan Satan occult.
Okay.
Bringing it back.
Goosebumps, the TV show. I'm not mad at you, Goosebumps. Debuted in primetime on October 27th, 1995. I was...
months old?
I was like 4 months old.
Damn.
July, August.
I'm going to tell you a little story about this when we're in discussion. Trust me.
Okay. And was, unsurprisingly, a giant fucking hit.
Giant hit. Like, huge. Fucking huge. Yeah.
Over 14 million people watched the premiere, which debuted with The Haunted Mask in a one-hour special.
Oh, man. That brings the nostalgic feels right there.
Did you see this?
I saw it. I'm going to tell the story now. I was in the height of my Goosebumps fever. We all heard the rumble. We saw the commercials leading up to it, weeks before. And see the new show, Goosebumps. And, the next day on the playground, everybody's like, are you... they're making a show? Everybody's losing their minds. And we all,
I love the word of mouth, marketing campaign that targets children, where it's like, if we just get, one kid who has one TV just to see this commercial.
Yeah.
Playgrounds around the fucking country.
Dude, they lit up. They fucking lit up. Because, honestly, we watched it as a family. Everybody in the neighborhood was like, okay, everybody, we went inside early. Mm-hmm. We're playing outside so we can all sit and watch Goosebumps and talk about it the next day. And it was
God, remember when you do that?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was honestly such a cool premiere, too, because I read the shit. That was my favorite book. Was The Haunted. That was my favorite one.
Right, we talked about this, yeah.
Yeah, and my number one. And they did it justice. I was very happy. I was there were differences that I recognized as a kid. I was still that purist a little bit. But at the same time,
you fucking sanctimonious.
Yeah. But by the end of it, I was like, oh my God. And then they give you the little thing at the end. It's like, and then Goosebumps will air regularly on blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, there's more.
It's not just a one-time thing.
Oh, it was a special time.
It was special.
Yes.
Oh man. Meanwhile, I'm
Goosebumps. Put the mask on her.
My parents just propping me up in front of the TV, just being like, and this, just watch it. Just absorb it into your brain, little tiny child.
Oh, that's funny. The visual of that is fantastic.
I just wish my parents had done that. It's so fucking funny. Oh, I also just can't get over how Canadian.
Yeah, your parents suddenly became in that bit.
I was talking about the special, but now that I mention it, my parents were strangely Canadian.
That's funny. It was very Canadian.
Anyway, so Goosebumps would continue to air on Fox Kids, with episodes often either debuting on Saturday mornings or Friday afternoons. Prime time for kids.
Yeah, that was the fun thing. They didn't actually have a set date. They were like, we'll fucking put it when you put it.
It's a surprise.
Oh, the 90s.
Right. The show was such a hit that a couple other two-parters received primetime airings, such as A Night in Terror Tower and The Werewolf of Fever Swamp.
Which had the coolest cover back in the day. It was
dope. Oh, I know. Okay, yeah, I can see it in my brain.
Yeah, it was dope.
Yeah. Sloppy the Dummy became even more popular on the show, even earning 2 Saturday morning specials where he hosted marathons of Goosebumps episodes. I remember that shit.
I saw that shit too.
Yeah.
That shit was fantastic.
I remember that as a ute. okay, these were Slappy's Monster Madness, where the dummy and a few other Goosebumps staples attempted to create the scariest monster ever.
Yeah, and that one I saw. That one was cool.
And Slappy's Sideshow Saturday, which was a carnival hosted by the Devious Dummy.
I missed that one. Oh. I remember I was like, I want to watch it, but we had to go somewhere.
Yeah,
it came on later, I'm sure.
By this point in time, Goosebumps was selling 5 million books a month.
Shit.
With merchandising being everywhere. Even Taco Bell had Goosebumps toys.
They did. Yeah, they totally fucking did.
Taco Bell.
They had Nintendo 64 toys, too. It was really cool.
I mean, Taco Bell was kind of like, they had some pretty cool toys.
They did. They were badass.
Spin-off series like Tales to Give You Goosebumps and Give Yourself Goosebumps.
The goat.
The latter of which was an awesome game book series were released to much fanfare.
That's right.
Okay, sorry. Goosebumps was high. I should be. Goosebumps fever was high, but soon the good times would come to an end, and it wasn't because of the conservative Christians.
Oh no.
They didn't burn this shit down?
They did. No, they never win, Alex.
They never win.
I mean, they win, but then time kind of passes them by. That's usually how it works. Yeah. Anyways, what ended up really causing the decline of Goosebumps was good old competition.
What?
This time, from stupid-ass Scholastic themselves. Also, very possibly oversaturation, as this is the 90s, and cynicism was kind of the norm at this point.
So, not cynicism.
Yeah, little edgelords. I was one of them.
Yeah!
Not for Goosebumps, though. I still love that shit. But in 1996, Catherine Applegate's Animorphs series. Oh, that was the shit back then. That was the shit.
Oh,
it
man.
It debuted. And took a major piece of the Goosebumps pie. The series followed 5 humans and 1 alien named Axe, who were able to turn into any animal they touched, which they used to stave off a secret alien invasion. So,
okay, so I've never read an Animorphs book.
No?
No.
Oh my god, they were amazing.
See, but here's the thing. It's like, I was such like a die-hard fucking Goosebumps fan
mm-hmm.
that like it never really appealed to me. I just remember like... Every time I'd go through like my school's library
mm-hmm.
and like go through the book covers and be like, you touched a possum.
Oh. Oh.
You touched a rat. And like just like, looking.
You touched a gorilla. How the fuck did that happen?
Yeah. Like I just made fun of the covers. Like the little edgelord I was.
We were like a fucking book club with Animorphs. Like we would all get the new one when it came to the book fair. Like that was the one we would all read it. Like within a weekend and come back on Monday. It's like, dude, what's gonna happen? Holy shit, do you remember this part? Like, it was like a whole fucking thing. It was amazing.
That is remarkably wholesome.
Oh, we would play as Animorphs. I was Marco. He was the brown kid with the black hair.
So, the one brown kid. Yeah. Like, that's me.
Yep. That was that guy. Yeah. It was great.
Jesus Christ.
Ugh. Oh my. Cause the first book also had a kid that, so the rule in Animorphs is that you can only be transformed as an animal for an hour. And if you stayed past it, you'd permanently become the animal. In the first book, one of the kids named Tobias stayed past it. So he was a hawk the whole time. He never became a human again.
And he just stayed with them?
He stayed with them to help fight the alien invasion.
As a hawk.
As a hawk.
Forever.
Forever. And his parents were like so sad. They're like, my boy's been missing. And it was like a whole, it was very dramatic.
That's
for a kid.
That's really sad.
It was actually a really dark book
That's
series.
That's very sad. It That's was... really fucking sad, actually.
Yeah.
And how old were these kids? Like 8?
Yeah, they were like our age, yeah. At the time, yeah.
Our age?
No, well, at the time, right. I say R, but when I read it,
right,
yeah.
I understand. You're speaking
8
at,
to 10.
You're speaking as your 8 to 10-year-old self, I get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Oh, my God.
I can see why it kind of took the attention away.
Which is so funny, because now it's just like, do you have any book nerds that are all just like, give me as much as humanly possible? Like, it won't pull from, like, any particular one author's piece of the pie? Like...
Hmm? What do you mean?
Well, okay. For example, if this were to happen now,
yeah.
I do not think Animorphs would necessarily detract or like,
oh, absolutely. You know what I mean? We're used to content overload.
We're used to, exactly.
We're absolutely content used to content overload.
Yeah, that's
we're totally
exactly
used to
it.
That.
Like, and I, yeah.
Yeah, we weren't. No. And of course, a lot of us were poor. So, well, you know, we could sure. only get well, one even, book per fair.
Or even in my case, where it's just like, I read so fast and mm-hmm. with like such like ferocity as a kid, where I would just. Like, just let me loose in her library. I'll come back with, like, a stack of books. And then, yeah. like, 2 weeks later, I'd be like, I'm done with these. I will leave with a new stack. Thank you. Like, I just read so fast and, like, so quick. Like, I just don't know how any of it stayed in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of weird, right? But, I mean, you're a kid. You're a goddamn sponge at that age. You really yeah. are. As my adult brain, the YouTube videos do it. that's where I'm at.
I'm just like, I just need you to just like feed it directly into my brain now mm-hmm, and via YouTube videos. Although I do listen to audiobooks now.
Oh yeah, that's the
that's
way to
how
go.
I yeah that's how I get around it because I just don't have time to read now.
Good old perk of Amazon Prime, you get one a month.
I have an Audible account. I get
you get a lot. Yeah, okay.
I get 3 credits a month. Jesus. I listen to a lot of audiobooks.
We'll make some racks. I just got Prime. I'm good.
Yay!
Anyways, though, this Animorphs series that I gushed about for the last 5 minutes, 90s kids flocked to this shit. As I put an example right here, they really did. But also, there was one big problem. That was one big problem for Scholastic, as since it took the buzz away from their bread and butter, R.L. Stine, obviously. Author Catherine Applegate could not pump out releases nearly as quickly as Scholastic's former Golden Boy.
Aww.
Yeah, so she was taking all the heat, but not being able to replace it with revenue. Just wasn't able to happen.
If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Oh, again, with the 90s-isms. I love it. I love it. But of course, the result of this was a 40% decrease in revenue for Scholastic.
Oh my God.
Yes, which actually legitimately, and I looked at articles from the time, it sent shockwaves throughout the whole book industry. Like, this was front page news, and it showed just how important R.L. Stine was to Scholastic's success. Like, it was a huge deal.
Oh, wow.
But by December of 1997, the last book in the Goosebumps original run would be released, Monster Blood 4, which, by the way, is a very rare book, with the author choosing to focus on the spinoff series, Goosebumps 2000, which were released in 1998, and do fine. However, growing animosity between the author and Scholastic made it so only 25 books were released in the 2-year time span that it ran, and some of them actually without the Goosebumps name. Yeah.
Why?
They had a merchandising dispute.
Aw.
Yeah.
Fucking Scholastic.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. Like they were like accusing each other of like, oh, you're making these deals behind our back, and like it was like a big thing.
Oh
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the good times are done, Alex.
Aw.
Of course, they were intended to be scarier than the original series, which I remember it was definitely marketed that way, with taglines like 2,000 times the scares and welcome to the new millennium of fear. Yeah. Yeah.
Cheese. Absolute cheese.
At this time, the show had actually also finished its run, though it did manage to adapt some Goosebumps 2000 stories like Bride of the Living Dummy, which had a very cool cover. I remember that one.
I vaguely remember that.
Mm-hmm. It was a take on the original Night of the Living Dummy cover, but with the bride. It was pretty cool.
Okay, like, I do remember that.
Like, as a little nerd back in the day, it was very nostalgic. Stine was actually set to follow up Goosebumps 2000 with Goosebumps Gold in 2001, which would feature a sequel to the Haunted Mask series, The Haunted Mask Lives, and Welcome to Deadhouse. Happy Holidays from Deadhouse. But the author was experiencing a serious case of burnout.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, dude, he was pumping them out way too fast. He had been working on the series for nearly a decade and was in dire need of a break. So despite still selling a respectable amount of books pretty regularly, the author stepped aside and would leave Goosebumps behind for almost a full decade.
Damn.
Damn, damn, damn indeed.
Damn.
Scholastic, we need more.
So, Goosebumps would get a revival in 2008.
Damn.
Many years later. I would be in middle school at this point.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. With Goosebumps Horrorland, but the format would focus on 2 separate stories exclusively and run for only 19 entries.
Yeah, he's slowing down. I mean, he's pretty old at this point, too, so.
I mean,
he was born in the 30s.
It's a couple weeks after, but by the time this episode's coming out, but he just turned, like, 79?
Yes.
Like.
Yeah.
The man is old.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so either way, this didn't make much of a difference, though, as Goosebumps would go on to sell over 400 million copies, as previously stated, making R.L. Stein the most successful... The second most successful children's author ever, behind only J.K. Rowling, though he did write a lot more books, and fuck J.K. Rowling.
There you go, see?
The series still goes on to this day, currently on its Goosebumps Slappy World series.
Jeez.
And even received two movie releases in which Jack Black plays R.L. Stein, which, frankly, I love.
Yeah.
The first film was a pretty big hit. The second one, not so much.
Yeah, good old Hollywood.
With the excellent art from Tim
Jacobus,
and an insane output from a hard-working author and a very hungry publisher, Goosebumps pretty much rules the 90s and cemented itself as one of the most popular children's series of all time.
Of all time?
All time. Mm-hmm. Which I wholeheartedly agree with. Some books in the series would go on to be referred to as the unprinted, as they only exist in their first editions, making them highly valuable to fans of the series. These are Legend of the Lost Legend.
I remember that one.
Werewolf Skin, I Live in Your Basement, and the previously mentioned Monster Blood 4. I remember I Live in Your Basement.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I remember that one.
Mm-hmm. I remember my elementary school had a copy of it.
Damn, that's pretty cool. I actually remember Monster Blood 4 as like the cover on the Scholastic thing, and I think they marketed it as like the last of the... I was so sad. I was like fucking... I'm like, what? The last one? I was like, cool, Monster Blood 4, the last Goosebumps book. What?
Ever.
Ugh, what a time.
So, rabid fans will have even more to sink their teeth into very soon as a new Goosebumps series is in the works with both Scholastic and Sony. Being considered a reboot. So now a whole new generation can be fucking terrified by Slappy the Dummy.
Who's great. He's a very great character.
R.L. Stein's other series, like Fear Street, also saw a surge in popularity thanks to a movie adaptation on Netflix, further solidifying the enduring presence of the author's brand. So, like previously mentioned, R.L. Stein is now 78 years old. Or is he 78 or 79?
78.
Okay, he just turned 78. Still married to his wife of almost 40 years and has had his words shared across the world. With Goosebumps scaring youths of 32 different languages. Not bad for a former fearful kid from Ohio.
Yep, that's right. That's a pretty good success story for a guy
who's... Youths everywhere.
Youths everywhere. All across the different languages. Be like, ah, Sloppy! But I think that's pretty cool.
I think it's neat.
He's just a little guy from Ohio who's kind of a little bitch sometimes, and he turned that into, like, second most successful series of all time.
You know, in my heart, he's the first.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He didn't send some fucked up shit about any group of people, so he's...
He hasn't disparaged an entire demographic.
No. He seems like a chill dude.
I mean, listen, when I watched the Haunted Mask episode, and he introduces it.
Oh my god, he's such a dad,
like,
isn't he?
I'm like, oh my god. You wholesome motherfucker.
He's totally not an actor.
No, he's not. He's not an actor by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know why they asked him
to do this. I even showed my parents. What do you guys think? And it shows the skeletons. He's like, I think they liked it.
Anthony is not exaggerating.
No, it was pretty, yeah, pretty one-to-one. That's
almost exactly what he, like, how, like, his inflection. Not an actor.
No, I think he got better at it as the series went along.
I hope he didn't.
But, yeah, I know, right? It would lose the charm. But that was Goosebumps right there. Now, I mean, we're just going to have to wax nostalgic here. So, what are your thoughts on the impact of the original Goosebumps? And, you know, what have you read? How did you feel about them back in the
day? Okay, so, when I was in second grade, I was 7 years old, I started reading them, and I remember thinking, like, these could be scarier.
Yeah. but they were fun.
They were super fun. Mm-hmm. My favorite was Say Cheese and Die.
That was a good one.
Say Cheese and Die, because it had, in my opinion, the best cover.
It had such a cool cover.
Like,
I agree.
In my opinion, it was my personal favorite.
Oh my gosh, I remember that one.
So, I had very fun memories, and the library at the school that I went to... growing up, had a bunch of them.
Dude. And they were already released by the time anyway.
Yeah,
so you, had, time, you could pull from anyone you wanted.
Well, at this point, we're
to.
Talking when I was in second grade, it was 2001, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Oh, shit. So you're like right after the series like was really
done.
Kind of, yeah, done, yeah. But also like had hit its peak.
Uh-huh.
That's nice. Okay.
Yeah, so they were almost, by the time they got to me, were kind of almost dated.
Yeah, probably.
But I still was just, I loved them. I love that one, The Haunted Mask I liked, Monster Blood I really liked.
Monster Blood was good.
Yeah.
Oh, the second one with the hamster?
I haven't read the second one.
Yeah, the giant hamster got a hold of it. It was a big fucking hamster. It was great.
It was a huge hamster.
Yeah, was it two or three? I can't remember. But, like, yeah, again, waxing nostalgic here. But how do you feel about the impact of the original Goosebumps?
I like that it's something that I can kind of have, I can share with anyone, regardless mm-hmm. of whether or not they're, like, hardcore horror fans now.
I mean, 400 million copies. Somebody's had their encounter.
Someone
with
is Goosebumps. Right. They know what it is. Yeah. They've seen it. Even even the TV show, the Haunted Mask one that we watched for this, like it was nostalgic. It was just like I remember this. I remember this.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, even some of the other episodes, I tried to give them a few more a watch, and yeah, it was cheesy, but it was wonderful. And it's its own awesome, like, weird form of cheese, which I think is very much still reflective in the books themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, this was part of, I think, my gradual introduction to horror. Because 1992, again, my parents let me watch horror movies when I was young, but, like, that was pretty young. Like, that was pretty young. But I learned how to read really early.
Sure.
Like pretty fucking early. So a very easy read was the Goosebumps books. And honestly, there was such a vibe around a new release and a new story. Like it really was like almost like a forum when he came back to school and everybody like
I love
talked
that.
About the new Goosebumps.
Yeah. I love that.
It was it really was very impactful. I think it helped kids really read mm-hmm. and kind of understand reading and how to do it well.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, that translated to me going on forums and, like, reading stuff on the internet and, like, articles
okay. Okay, I can see that.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, it created a whole, I think, generation of readers. And it was honestly really just fantastic. Like, I'm glad something like this became a phenomenon because it's wholesome in a way that's massively appealing. And its stories, while cheesy and kind of weird, but and a little derivative, honestly, like, they are fun. And, you know, I think the impact is lasting. So, anybody getting into Goosebumps, that's why we're talking about it. It is a very, very impactful series.
I agree. Yeah. I think, and it sucks because I feel like I was just at the tail end of that.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, that cultural kind of fascination.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really have that. I didn't have a bunch of, like, now...
Mm-hmm.
As an adult, I can definitely talk to most people and be like, hey, did you read Goosebumps as a kid or when you were younger?
Yeah.
And people be like, yeah. But as a kid,
mm-hmm.
Going through that in, like, real time, I didn't really have that.
No, I think that was prime Harry Potter time right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of took over for a little bit.
Harry Potter, for sure, yeah. And then when I got older, the era that you're thinking of,
mm-hmm.
Like, for me, it was, like, sixth grade or so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's when, like, I started, like, picking, like, I started reading everything I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started going online to find other people who have read the same books
yes.
that I had.
Yeah, yeah. So the discussion was there. It was just in a different format, essentially.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool. Cool. So, well, with that, how do you feel about R.L. Stine's journey as an author? And what about his style do you think made his work appealing to younger audiences? Because, I mean, this, like, his whole body of work here. Like, we're talking Fear Street, everything.
Sure. So, I haven't read Fear Street,
mm-hmm.
so I can't really speak to that for sure. I can't speak to the movie.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, which is pretty cool.
But, I mean, I'm very interested in Fear Street just more as, like, a teenage-oriented, like, a more adult.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not, like, adult-adult, but, like, a more adultier version of Goosebumps. I probably should have read that, honestly, as I was getting older. Obviously, not when I was seven, but you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, yeah. As you aged into reading more complex
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Definitely. I really admire his journey as an author. Like,
me too.
I think that, I don't know, I think it's very hard to be that dedicated to something for as long as he has been.
That's a good point. Like, for a really big portion of his 70-year-old life at this point.
Yeah.
That's, like, kind of insane.
Yeah, and it's most, I mean, for the entirety of his adult life, for the most part, has just been writing.
I do want to know what happened in the 60s and 70s. They really gloss over that, so I'm
They just kind of yada-yada through it.
They always yada-yada. I'm like, dude, what was he fucking doing in New York in the 60s and 70s? Jesus.
Drugs. He was doing drugs. Oh, yeah.
Long-haired R.L. Stine. I imagine that guy was into some shit.
Yeah.
Right? Oh wow, with like the rumble. He's in
a
early
Jewish
days of hip-hop.
Man in New York City in the 60s and 70s.
Oh boy. Oh, he was.
What could he have possibly been up to?
I don't know. But I mean, I again, like you made a very good point there. His entire adult life, really. Like he came off of school. He was always, I mean, from childhood, really. Like he was that kid that was just passionate about writing and telling stories. And he did it in a way that's accessible. Throughout his entire career.
Yeah.
Which is fucking badass.
I mean, the only thing I really had that much dedication for is this.
That's right.
And if I could stick with this until I'm 78, I'm golden.
And they're going to be like, man, what were they doing in like the fucking 2010s? Like, what kind of shit were they into? But
drugs.
Mean, yeah, that's right.
Doing drugs.
Ugh. But I mean, also like, his style was very simple. He wrote it from his own childhood experiences, and I think that reflected in a way that made it appealing to younger kids.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, think about it. Like, basing stories off of real child's terrors.
That's right.
Is a great way to kind of get started and to pull inspiration from, like, legitimate terrifying experiences you have when you're a kid.
Yeah.
All of my best scary stories are absolutely based off of, like, scary instances from when I was a kid.
Yeah, tangible fears you've experienced.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because they're fucking terrifying. And everyone, like, remembers being a kid and being terrified of X, Y, and Z.
That's a very good point. Yeah. And I mean, he also did a really good thing by utilizing tropes and other stuff that, as a kid, you're not aware it's a trope.
You don't know what tropes are.
You really don't know. So you're experiencing it for the first time a lot of the times, and it's fun. It's a new thing, and it helps you identify the shit later on, which is pretty cool.
It's very fun seeing it now and being like, I know exactly where this is going to go, even though I've never seen it before.
Oh, man. So, I mean, so you say Say She's and Die was your favorite one, but were there any other books that stood out to you when you were younger?
Of R.L. Stine's?
Of Goosebumps.
Or of Goosebumps?
Yeah.
I think I already mentioned this, but Monster Blood.
Monster Blood, that's right.
Do you remember Monster Blood, that when they did the either the TV episode for it?
I think so, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Because it was like a two-parter also, I
think so.
Yeah.
Like, that one fucked me up pretty bad. Say She's and Die, another TV episode that they did that also messed me up tremendously. Night of the Living Dummy, obviously.
Night of the Living Dummy is a fucking classic. Night of the Living Dummy 2 in particular was my shit.
Okay.
I love that
one. Haven't read 2.
2, well, 2 was the one that they did for the TV show.
I haven't seen the TV show one.
Oh my god. Slappy was pretty creepy. Yeah, it was a creepy design, I gotta say. Yeah.
Slappy just also reminds me, I don't think, did we cover it when we covered Buffy?
What?
There is an episode that has a ventriloquist dummy. There is a ventriloquist dummy episode on Buffy the Vampire.
I did not know that. No. That sounds awesome.
You're so affronted. It's in season one. And it's so, always bringing it back.
Mm-hmm.
But in season one of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's very, like, monster of the week type of deal.
Yes,
like,
I remember that.
Every episode is a very rigidly, like, its own story.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one that has a killer dummy in it.
Oh,
and
that's great.
It's pretty freaky.
I actually love it.
I really like it. Like, I remember because when I first saw that season, like, that was the scariest episode for me by far. Because I'm terrified of dummies.
I have to hunt
I'm
that
terrified
down.
Of dolls. It's on Hulu. You don't have to hunt very far.
No, I will still hunt it.
We had the same,
I will Google.
We had the same conversation about this where I was just like, I will hunt for this episode. And you're like, it's on Netflix. I'm like, I will still hunt for it.
We share the same brain.
It just happens. But, I do definitely credit R.L. Stine for embedding me with this, like, fear of ventriloquist dummies, and then dolls subsequently, and then, yeah, so.
No, yeah, well, and as stated before for me, I mean, again, the slap of the dummy is terrifying, but Haunted Mask was my goat all the time. That was one, I think that may have been the first book I actually owned. Like, really? I read it so much before I could buy another one, and it was fucking fantastic. I do remember also being really terrified. I don't remember anything about the story, but I really remember being fucking scared as a kid, as a young kid, of Welcome to Camp Nightmare. That one kind of fucked me up a little bit.
Oh, okay. Welcome to Camp Nightmare.
Yeah, that one scared me. And then I believe there was one more. I think Stay Out of the Basement was another one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember. Oh, see, a lot of these I didn't get to read, but the covers are like so, like, I'm like, ah, yes, 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 I know.
Yeah.
These look familiar.
And then I'm looking at a list right now. There's a couple more. But I mean, overall, like, those were kind of the heavy hitters. Oh, The Headless Ghost. I remember liking that one. See, and I wasn't always scared, like you said, but I just enjoyed the story. The Headless Ghost is just, you know, Sleepy Hollow, Ichabod Crane. It's just that, but in like a more digestible form.
Yeah.
Or like a funner take on it, which I think, again, it's super, super cool.
Stay Out of the Basement.
Yeah.
That one was like definitely one of the ones that messed me up for sure.
Oh, man.
Say Choose and Die.
What a time.
I know. Now I'm looking at a list. The Girl Who Cried Monster.
Yes. That was another big one.
Yes. Now, see, now you just have me looking at a list.
The covers are cool, aren't they?
Dang it.
They're, like, really badass. Like, yeah. I said, the artwork was also really appealing.
Yeah, One Day at Horrorland I read also. Mm-hmm. Why I'm Afraid of Bees terrified me, just the cover, so I never read it.
I remember I never read Bad Hair Day because the cover was pretty creepy.
Which one's that one?
It was a fucking rabbit.
Oh, okay.
Hair. Yeah.
A hair.
it was so funny. This was one of the later ones.
Ah, yes. Monster Blood 2. There it is.
Yeah. Is that the hamster?
Uh-huh.
Yup. I love that one. Okay, that one was up there too for me. That one was really good.
Oh, man.
It's nice to look back, right?
It is.
I hope our listeners are also just feeling the nostalgia.
I'm sorry. You guys can't see what we can see right now.
Oh, we're sharing some books later on Instagram. Don't worry. We'll let you see it.
Yeah, it's true. They're all... I just passed my... Oh, Ghost Beach.
Ghost Beach. I didn't read that one.
No, it just looks cool. That's just like, again, these are just the ones that are immediately sticking out to me in terms of like, this looks very familiar.
Goosebumps is a pretty fundamental part of the 90s. And of course, for 90s horror in particular. How do you feel about Goosebumps' impact on the genre in this era?
That is a great question that I don't know how to answer. oh, man. How would you answer this?
I mean, to me...
I need to think.
It made the genre very, like, just palatable for a whole generation of people. And I think it also created kind of an expectation when it comes to your spooky media. So it came in the time of Hocus Pocus and, like, other stuff that was, like, really brought the Halloween and, like, the spookiness to children. So when you combine something like Goosebumps with other stuff at the time, with Hocus Pocus, I've mentioned before, like Casper the Friendly Ghost, the Christina Ricci movie, and, like, things like that, of course, we already had Ghostbusters and other things to draw from. If you're a kid in the 90s, like... It's probably the best time to be a little bit of a spooky child. It really, really is. It helps, I mean, I guess, develop the taste for it. And you just want more.
I can see that. Yeah. Again, I feel like a lot of this missed me, like, just by, like, a fucking hair.
Yeah. Well, you did come into childhood in, like, kind of a post-9/11 era a little bit.
I did,
then,
yeah. Huh? Well, I mean, yeah. Considering that I was not... I mean, yes, I was born in the mid-90s, but I was, like, barely conscious for it, you know?
Exactly, yeah. So there's... I feel like... This is kind of... Everything in this era was very fantastical, which is something I think that got lost just less than a decade later.
I mean, this is all stuff that, like, I was able to watch as, like, kind of... As something I was able to go back and watch and be like, oh, this is super cool. This is something I'm really interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that it was, like... Not old, but it was something like from the past.
From the past, yes, exactly. Like, that makes sense. That's probably how I would look at Fear Street back in the day.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean that also, like, in the, like, I didn't get to, like, watch it live or do any of that stuff, even though I do have very distinct memories of, like, the Saturday thing with the dummy.
Well, it was, still had reruns. Like, Goosebumps continued to play, like, for a long time.
Okay, so I'm not just, like, making a false memory in my head
No. It totally had reruns in different channels and all that, too. So, like, it was
I don't feel crazy.
No. It was a huge hit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people realize how big of a hit this shit really was.
I mean, it was freaking huge, apparently. Like, yeah. I'm not surprised, but it is really cool to see, like, just, like, how wide this went.
Yes, exactly. And you gotta think, too, like, other languages in other countries had it, too.
Yeah. I'm just remembering. So I retweeted something a couple of days ago about R.L. Stine for his birthday, and it has a photo of him at his desk where he has every copy of every book.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's very cool.
I love that.
However, someone also, like, retweeted that tweet and made a comment and was just like, why did I think this was manga?
What?
Or, like, right, why did I think it was manga?
Oh! That's funny.
Like, why did I think these were all manga? Like, why did I think he was collecting manga?
Right? And somebody else was like, I thought it was hentai.
R.L. Stine, known hentai collector.
He's like, I put the Goosebumps covers over the hentai so my wife doesn't see.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's horrible. I like how we make him a little bit of a bastard and he's totally not.
No, he's not. Totally not. He's just, like, the most, like, if I were to see him walking on the street, like, I would, like, be like, good guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird though, because at the time he was actually labeled. I was reading this in history. I didn't include it in our history, but he was
like a weirdo.
No, he was labeled the Stephen King of children's horror.
I can see that.
Yeah, which is a pretty cool moniker. But I'm like, well, it's a pretty dark comparison at the same time.
Well, I mean, it's an easy comparison to make, but like both like horror novelists, both are known for the rapid speed in which they churn out content.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's an easy comparison, I guess.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Now, interesting. Do you ever think Goosebumps can attain a similar level of relevance that it had from its 90s heyday? Or do you feel like it's way past it?
Yeah, unfortunately, no.
Yeah. I don't think it'd ever be that.
I think, if anything, what would be kind of cool to see and is the something that we've seen kind of in recent years is things that were popular becoming popular again.
Yeah.
My boss loves talking about this. He's like, my kid loves listening to vinyl records. And he's just like, I don't know why.
Because it's fucking cool to do old shit like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I hope Goosebumps becomes, like gets recycled.
Yes. I think that would be fantastic as well. I mean, it'll never reach the heights that it had before, but I still think it can gain relevance. I think it's possible for it to do so.
I mean, I don't think... See, this is also the weird thing. And it is a bummer, but it's like, I don't think people are necessarily reading books like that.
No, they're not.
However, I did buy the first four Goosebumps for my sister for Christmas.
Or that's
first
awesome.
First eight.
Oh, that was a haunted mask. Good old Carly Beth right there. That's going to be fantastic.
Because I think we talked about this when fucking Phil was here. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Goosebumps, and I was just like, I want to buy these for my sister.
Yeah.
And my mom was just, she texted me, and she's like, I'm at Costco. They have these Goosebumps books. Do you want to buy them for your sister for Christmas? I'm like, do it. I will Venmo you. Do it.
Yep. Wrap it up.
This was in like July. August. Awesome. Like, I was just like, one gift done.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, but all of that is to say, I'm very excited to kind of move that down a generation.
Yes, and, I agree.
Like, at least get my sister into it, because, like, who doesn't want to, I don't know, everyone has to start somewhere.
Yeah, and they kind of, you know what, the stories are kind of classic in their own way, which I think should be experienced. And it's not... You know what? Slappy's a lot more digestible than Chucky, so let her start with Slappy.
It is... Slappy is Chucky light, for fucking sure.
Absolutely.
Also, it is a good way to tiptoe into horror.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way, if you're a kid, to kind of just start getting into it. It's not, like, too intense. It's totally fine.
Exactly.
Also, my sister's a spooky freaking kid. So you nurture that shit.
Exactly. You don't shame it. She might at some point, like, it could be very fundamental.
Right. Well, and also, like, I know my dad listens to those. I'm sorry, Dad. But, like, my parents aren't horror people. Uh-huh. So it wasn't something that was, like, that really got to be nurtured with me.
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of historical things and a lot of mystery things and a lot of sci-fi things that were very heavily nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
But not really the spooky side, because they just didn't really know how to handle it. Like, they were just like, it's weird. All right. Read this Magic Treehouse book and call it a day.
That's funny.
but...
Hey, hey, you made it here.
Exactly.
You made it here.
All roads lead to Rome if Rome is where you're meant to be.
Now, you find yourself trapped in a Goosebumps book.
Okay.
Which book is it, or which story is it?
Oh, Jesus.
And how do you fare?
And
if you could think of a twist for your particular Goosebumps tale, what twist happens to Alex Webster?
Okay. That is a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I think I would survive. Don't go in the basement.
Because would you go in the basement?
No, first of all. First of all, never go in the fucking basement. Or no, stay out of the basement. Sorry.
Okay.
That's the one I'm talking about. I think that I could easily distinguish between two people that I'm, like, two people that I love. Or, like, if
yeah.
I'm, you know what I mean? Like, if it's just, like, I don't know, my dad and plant dad. Like, I could distinguish enough. You know what I mean?
You're like, wow, I don't remember all those leaves in his hair.
Plant people.
No.
Yeah, I think I would survive. I think the twist would be I'm the plant person.
Oh, see? There you go.
I think that's how it's going to go.
She's like, she tried being a vegetarian for so long.
It was obvious all along.
Oh, that's funny. I am totally in the haunted mask. Like, I put that fucking bitch on. I put it on, and I am a bastard. I am Reddit me in real life.
Oh, no, yeah. Not Reddit you.
I am just like, yeah, you know, your political views are shit. Like I'm that kid.
Do you on Reddit have a completely different personality?
No, I'm not. I'm bullshit.
Okay.
Like, I'm totally not that guy. I totally am not. But, like, I'm still totally, like, just...
I mean, you are kind of an... And I'm
kidding. Yeah, I know, right? I am just more of a jerk with, like a face that matches the tone. And I feel like I will do the whole, like, bury a thing, a thing of a love or whatever it is. And the twist is I totally embrace it. Like, I'm like... And people find my face more appealing. They're like, you know what, dude? Yeah, okay. I believe what you're pitching. So mm-hmm. I think the big...
The monster fuckers just come flocking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, there's a whole thing with that. And then at the end of the day, I get an Alex Jones-like TV show or a program or YouTube bit where I am just like, you see? Like, that's me. I am the haunted
man. So you just embrace it.
I embrace it. That's okay. The twist. That's the twist.
That's the twist.
Yeah, and it's a big hit.
I respect it.
I've become alt-right fan.
No.
Never that far. Never that far. No.
Never that far.
Even the haunted mask has its fucking limits.
It's true.
Alex Jones puts on the haunted mask. It's like, Jesus, take me off, buddy.
I don't need love. I just need you to get out.
You're like, how is this more poisonous?
What's her name? Mary Beth?
Carly Beth. Yeah.
Even her, like, she still had the ability to kind of switch between being, like, her little fucking goblin self and being, like, she's being like, oh, no.
Oh, my God. That was so sad, though, when she was talking to the two boys and she, like, breaks her demon voice into a regular voice. And she was like, tell her you're sorry for, like, when you did this.
Oh, yeah.
And when you did that. And you made her feel so bad. And, like, you shouldn't have done that. And they were just like, we just like her. We didn't mean, like, it was a really, like, sad moment a kids program.
Again, Goosebumps has some very, like, I'm like, oh, my God, okay.
Yeah, some real childhood, like, trauma, honestly.
Sure.
Yeah, kind of.
God, that TV show. I mean, I watched it. Yeah, it was good.
It was fun.
Like, I've seen it so many times, but I'm just like, the cheese, the shitty special effects.
And those the twist between the commercial breaks are always fun.
They're so good.
Always fun. I'm like, so dramatic.
God, remember commercial breaks? Remember that shit?
When we needed them?
Yeah.
Yeah, not anymore. Not no mo. So, you know what? There was no Letterboxd review this episode.
Oh my gosh.
I think that's a little bit of a travesty. What are our Letterboxd reviews for Goosebumps?
What if we were making up some Letterboxd reviews?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that funny. Oh, God. Okay. Yeah. What are your Letterboxd reviews for Goosebumps?
Slap is the only toy I don't want in the bedroom.
Damn it. That's a good one. Mm-hmm.
I would hope that Carly Beth goes... American History X on one of those fucking twin boys. Like, that's my thing. She should have taken it that far.
Really?
Otherwise, not a haunted mask. Just a regular ass mask.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sad. I didn't read these ahead of time, so I couldn't prepare anything. I don't have anything. I'm sorry. Damn it.
Monster Blood is just child MDMA.
Monster Blood is child MDMA, okay. Say cheese and die, whereas the kid just is like totally fine with letting their whole family die.
Oh yeah, yeah. Say cheese and die should never be in the hands of a narcissist. there we go. And you know what? All those are like 3 to 4 stars. All right. Well, I think we're at it. I think we made it to this point.
Let's do it.
How would you rate overall
the Goose, whole franchise?
The whole franchise. I don't yeah. Let's say the books.
Okay, the books.
How would you rate your experience with the Goosebumps books out of 5 badass 90s covers from Mr. Jacobus?
Oh, man. I'll give it 4.
Yeah?
I'll give it 4 badass 90s book covers.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I was in it, so I'm going 5.
Yeah, that's fine.
Kind of had to.
You were like, yeah. You were like neck deep in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Neck deep is better analogy. I agree. I was definitely that deep in Goosebumps at that time. We got to keep PG for the crowd this time. But yes.
It's a children's book series.
It's a children's book series. As we talk about child
MDMA. MDMA. I was thinking that too. I was like, as we just say child MDMA, yeah. Which is better in comparison to the glow of the dark from the
as someone who lived through it, there was nothing like it. There was absolutely nothing like it, and I'm very thankful that I had that experience.
Oh yeah,
to be very honest with you,
I'm jealous.
Yeah,
but it was. I mean,
still worked.
The limited exposure that I did get to have, like, I loved it.
Yeah,
I still have this very nostalgic, like, cozy feeling,
right?
You know,
like, yeah, it's not scary. Well, some of the ones scared me when I was younger, but like,
sure.
It's cozy.
I mean, apparently your bad hair day one is... Well,
that cover was terrifying, but also Camp Nightmare. I remember was like, holy
oh
shit.
Yeah, Camp Nightmare looked cool though.
Oh, and we both got to give love to these fucking those Choose Your Own Adventure game books.
Yes,
that's how you elevate a fucking series right there.
Yes, I was such an impatient little bitch. I was just like, I literally would read them like in one sitting, but I would do this stupid thing where I would just not like what happened, so I would go back and
right?
Pick something else.
Okay, so one of my favorite reading experiences ever, which, you know, again, which is why this is a 5 out of 5, was Give Yourself Goosebumps, Trapped in Batwing Hall. That was the one with the bat on the cover. You were the new kid in school. They were always new kid in school. But, like, you had 2 factions to pick from.
I vaguely remember this.
I read it, and I went back and read it again with a different storyline. It's why I like games like Skyrim and Mass Effect. Like, it literally is just that.
That's why you like open world.
And Fallout, and, like, where you choose your factions. Like, it really was that impactful, but really a tremendous book. And it's $5 on eBay. I'm going to buy it.
The book?
It's $5.
You're buying it?
I might.
Yeah. I mean, if you do, let me know. Yeah. Like, that would be fun.
We'll read that shit.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, 5 out of 5.
The Horrible People's Book Club.
There you go. Well.
Dude, this is it.
This is it.
This is...
It's Halloween. We did it. Hope you guys enjoyed.
Oh, man. Another October in the books.
That's right. We covered some really cool stuff.
I'm
kind of
sad.
I know, but
it's
we covered some
to
cool
an
shit.
End.
We covered some really cool shit. Like, I'm really happy to
I
be
love
swast.
October. This
hey.
Is like
yeah?
when I'm at my strongest.
Right?
Although, I'm excited for things to like kind of slow down a little bit because mm-hmm. I was just talking to my friends about this. Except for one weekend, I've been busy
yeah.
every weekend since the last weekend of July.
It's because you've been hanging out with me this whole fucking time.
Are you always this busy?
Eh, kinda. I'm busy all the time. All the fucking time. I don't get a break.
I mean, I like hanging out with you, so
yeah.
it works, but Jesus
it
Christ.
Is exhausting, though. Yes, I agree. And you know what? It was good, because we worked our asses off this month, and we covered some really fun stuff. You introduced me to Over the Garden Wall, which
yes.
was such a great way to really kick this
love,
off.
I love introducing you to new shit.
Right. We brought our new guest. I got to show you my favorite Halloween.
Yes.
And we got to wax nostalgic over one of
the best
series.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, the second highest grossing children's series of all time.
Yeah.
How do you put it? That's just impactful.
It's a great
right
way to wind down from October.
That's right.
But that being said, that was Goosebumps. I guess it doesn't really have a release date, but by R.L. Stine.
By R.L. Stine. Scary books that are also funny.
Scary books that are also funny. I guess next week we are kicking off November, guys.
That's right. We're bringing back a fan favorite guest.
We are bringing back a fan favorite guest, and we're bringing back one of my favorite genres. Guys, we're talking aliens.
We're talking fucking aliens. That's right.
We're talking aliens.
Oh, we are getting pretty gruesome in this one, aren't
we? It is so fun. Actually, I haven't seen this. This is our guest's recommendation.
Holy shit.
So I haven't seen it. You have? Yeah, no.
No, I just know the reputation.
So. I just am familiar with the actual story.
Mm-hmm. So this will be fun.
It'll be fun. I'm very excited.
Oh, and after that, we have our... Da 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 da! 150th episode!
Yay!
Oh, hey, shit.
Oh my gosh. So we are, oh, Jesus Christ. So 150.
150th episode coming up middle of November. It's one we're really excited about.
I'm very excited. It's one of our favorite fucking movies.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk about it. It'll be such a good time.
And we have guests for that one too.
Two,
that's right. It'll be a little round table over here.
Oh, it'll be a good time. I hope you guys will join us for that. I don't know if we want to give them a brief little overview, but we have some other...
That's right.
I guess... in par for the season,
mm-hmm.
per our yearly tradition at this point, we have something coming up.
That you guys listen to every November. You know every what it November. Is. You know what it is. If you don't, check our November releases for more.
We have some cool stuff for that. And then I'm missing one, and I know what it is because I was looking at it earlier. Don't say it. Got it. And then we are covering another sequel for another favorite franchise of ours.
An absolute favorite of ours. Although, yeah, and it has one of the scariest scenes in the franchise.
Yes, this is the one that I think is traumatized once again an entire generation.
I think so too. Yes, absolutely.
So I'm very excited to talk about that. So that's just your little brief overview. I sincerely hope you'll join us for that. I know spooky season might technically be over, but it can always be spooky season if you just have a can-do attitude.
That's absolutely right.
It's always spooky
season. Doesn't end here.
No, it's always spooky season in my house, in my heart, in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope you guys will stick with us through that. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard and want to give us a 5-star rating, if you're listening on iTunes, that would be freaking wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Please subscribe wherever you're listening as well. Not only do you get notified when we release new episodes, which are, of course, every Wednesday, you also will help other people find this podcast, which is also amazing. And then if you think we deserve a couple bucks for what we're doing, we do also have a Patreon. Mm-hmm. We're always thinking of fun new little things to toss up on there. So if you think we deserve a couple bucks, we have tiers as low as $5 a month. So for the cost of a Starbucks coffee, you could help support some independent podcasters out here in Los Angeles.
That's right.
So head on over to patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod to check out all of our spooky offerings over there. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
That's right.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. Don't know what I'm up to these days, but I'm rounding out my horror review, so I'll be doing that through the 31st. And after that, I'm sure I'll be thinking of something else.
Yeah, I'll be on a business trip in Vegas, so you might see some Vegas Anthony. A little bit. Just a little bit. And then otherwise, you know, I'm just chilling, trying to enjoy Los Angeles in the fall. Los Angeles in the fall.
It's beautiful.
It's really wonderful. I love it.
So
I love it.
I hope you all have a very happy Halloween. Stay safe out there if you are going out. And we will catch you guys next week. And in the meantime, if you see a gruesome mask and a terrifying shopkeeper tells you don't put it on your head, maybe, might I suggest you don't do it.
Yes, and also, stay the fuck out of the basement.
Bye, guys.